We know not today what the morrow may bring, the hymn that we've just sung, and how true that is. I was doing a little reading this past week on a malady that most of us suffer from, but for some it's actually a psychological condition. It's called procrastination. It's where those who really have a real difficulty with it are unable to make the decision to do things today, and so they keep delaying it for a later time. Of course, we have all sorts of jokes and comments in our culture about that. I even discovered there's more than one book out just of excuses people use for not doing something when they ought to, but put it off to the future. I gathered a few little ones here we'll recognize, both on the serious side about why we shouldn't do it, and also from the somewhat humorous side. Someone said, the sooner I fall behind, the more time I have to catch up. Or someone else said, one of the greatest labor-saving inventions of today is tomorrow. After all is said and done, more is said than is done. That might well reflect some of those, including myself, who tend to sometimes put things off. But on the more serious side, repeating what has been long an witticism or aphorism, as it's sometimes called in our culture, is Charles Dickens, well over 100 years ago, said, my advice is to never do tomorrow what you can do today. Procrastination is the thief of time. Pablo Picasso, the famous artist, said, only put off until tomorrow what you're willing to die, having left undone. Because the truth is, we only have today. We don't know what tomorrow may hold. Certainly we've all been dramatically and tragically reminded of that with the events of the last couple of days in Connecticut and the death of those many people, most of them children. Certainly no one could have imagined the day before that anything could possibly ever happen like that to their child, to their loved one, to their school, in their community. And yet, that's the nature of the future. We don't know that. Certainly the whole idea of procrastination is much more complex one than just what jokes and little witty sayings might cover. The truth is that sometimes what some might label as procrastination is actually a good thing. Patience, reflection, and well-thought-out response to things usually produces a better result than instantly doing something without weighing all the consequences. Yet some might consider that procrastination. I've discovered, not always, but at least often in my life, that if I will use some time and thought and put off for a day or two spending money, I'm usually better off for it. Certainly this time of year, people are very much into the impulse buying mode, and so they're going to instantly or very quickly buy things that probably if it wasn't some feeling of pressure that they need to buy it for a gift for someone for the immediate holiday coming up, they probably wouldn't buy it at all. So that's true not only in our finances, but many of our personal relationships. If we can have a much slower response to some of the difficulties and challenges that exist in our relationships with others, or even things that are life impacting. Sometimes people make instant decisions they live with for a lifetime. If they could have just taken a little time. Some might say that's procrastination, but I say that can be a good thing when you do it that way. But on the other hand, sometimes delay or procrastination is very detrimental, and especially to fall into the mindset that I've got time, I've got later, I can wait. If we think that we have plenty of time to do something later, it probably means much of it never gets done. I've been reflecting this past week on what the Scriptures have to say on the importance of today. Not tomorrow, but today. Each day is that day's today. We want to see a little bit about what the Scriptures have to say about today. Just three little thoughts for this morning. First of all, is the Scriptures tell us that life is briefer than we often think. Its brevity should force us to focus more on our todays. The passage that was read for us at the beginning of the service this morning certainly reflects that. James, as he's writing to his fellow believers, has to say to them, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Certainly he's reflecting people who were business people and had plans for the future that required them to go elsewhere and spend a great deal of time there and do this and do that. And so they've always got these plans. But it says, why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Now, he wasn't telling them they should not be industrious in business. He wasn't saying they should just always live just in the moment and never take care of things that we might possibly take care of should tomorrow come. But rather, he's just saying if you spend all your time thinking about that instead of the importance of what is now and what God is expecting of you now. He says, instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. So we need to always be thinking that the important thing is, what's God's will in our life? Certainly, he expects us to take care of our families. We have to be good stewards of what he's given us. But there's much more to life than just those things. Jesus told the story back in the Gospel of Luke in chapter 12. About a certain man who was such a successful businessman that James might well have even been talking about. He says here in Luke chapter 12 that we need to be careful that we don't measure our lives by the abundance of our possessions. Yet don't we live in a culture where that's what most people... I was just reading this morning about a gentleman somewhere here in the United States who he wasn't wealthy, but he had carefully over a lifetime put away a little bit for the future, some good investments and good work and so forth. I mean, he had quite a bit of money, and he went to the doctor one day. He was a somewhat heavy drinker and went to the doctor one day, and the doctor raised a flag of alarm, and after tests and so forth, they told him that he was in the advanced stages of cirrhosis of the liver, and he only had 3 months. So he goes home and says to himself, If I've only got 3 months to live, what do I want to do in the next 3 months? So he made out a list of the things that he wanted to be sure and do before he died, drew all of his money out of the bank, cashed everything he had, and did as many of those things he could. About 6 weeks later, they discovered there was an error in the prognosis, and he didn't have cirrhosis of the... And he's complaining about it, because now he's spent all of his money. And he's done all these things that he had always been putting off doing and went ahead and did them anyway and spent his money to do them. But that's how our culture tends to measure things. We tend to measure a person's value and success by what he has, whether it's in material things or the financial resources that make those material things possible. Yet Jesus says we should not measure our lives based on how much we have. And he told them this parable, Luke 12 and verse 16. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you foolish man, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward. Only we don't know how long we have on this earth, and we know, as again the tragic story, not just this weekend, but tragic stories every day that come out of people whose lives are suddenly lost. They didn't plan on that happening. They don't know what tomorrow may bring. But in the meantime, what are we going to do about today? What do we do with ourselves and our lives and what we have for today? A little bit of research revealed that many others have thought about this as well. There's a book that was written in 2008, written by a minister, called One Month to Live. And he subtitled it 30 Days to a No Regrets Life. Well, it's an interesting book, but it's not like that he was told by the doctor he had 30 days to live, so there's no way he could really feel the urgency that someone who faced that did. But nevertheless, I think the idea behind it was good on his part. And that is, he was trying to get those in his congregation and all of those who read the book to start thinking about the fact, what if we knew we only had 30 days to live? In truth, we don't even know we have one day to live. And he urged people to rearrange their priorities and their approach to life based on that. Perhaps some of you have heard of a man by the name of Steve Jobs. He was one of the co-founders of the Apple Computer Company, now just called Apple Company. After it was founded, it grew large, and he put part of the operation in the hands of others, and eventually they fired him. And he went off and did other things, but eventually they called him to come back, and he took the company back over in like 1996, I think it was, something like that, and turned it into the most valuable company in the world today. It's worth more than Exxon. It's worth more than any other company on the face of the earth, just in dollar valuation. But he died last year. But he died of a disease that he knew about since 2004. Because in 2004, he was diagnosed with pain. At first, they told him it was a very treatable form. It turned out not to be. Then they told him that he had 3 years to live at most. He lived 7. But in 2005, he was invited to speak at the commencement exercises at Stanford University in California. Mr. Jobs himself never finished college. He never got past freshman year at the college he went to. And yet he had a great respect for those who did go to college and finish. And so when he spoke at Stanford at that commencement exercise, he told the students and the faculty gathered there that this is the closest he ever got to a graduation from college. But not everyone remembers that part. They remember this one part of his speech. Because he had been told just a year before that he had pancreatic cancer and he would not survive. He says, "Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you're going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose." Those last years he had on this earth, even though he may not have necessarily devoted them to spiritual things, were probably the most productive in his entire life, because he said he wanted to be remembered for changing the world in this particular way. And with his company, he managed to do that. We need to be the same way. We need to think, what am I going to do today that's going to be important? Not say, someday I will do this. Someday I will help someone else. Someday I'll mend a relationship. Someday, today. We need to be sure that we're doing something. He said elsewhere in that speech that when he was much younger, even before he had left Apple for the first time, and before, of course, he knew that he didn't have as full a long a life on earth as he would have liked to have had, someone had made him start thinking about this whole subject of what are you doing that's important. And he said when he gets up in the morning and looked in the mirror at that person, he asked that person in the mirror, "What are you going to do today that's truly important?" And he says, "If I go very many days without having an answer for that person in the mirror, I need to do something." And that's certainly true of us as well. That's God's will for us. Existence doesn't end when we die, but our ability to do things on this earth that would make a difference. So first of all, today just reflects how brief life can be for all of us. But secondly, today ought to remind us of God's continual care and provision for us. It's interesting when we go all the way back to the beginning of the Scriptures, in the Garden of Eden, when He creates the first man and the first woman, it tells us that every day God came and spent time with that couple. I think that's a reflection of the fact that God spends every day with every. As time rolled on through the Scriptures and people go down to Egypt and they grow into a mighty nation there, and under Moses He brings them out with a mighty hand at the Red Sea as they cross it, and then the Egyptians die in the closing of the sea afterwards. He carries them out into the wilderness where there's not enough to live on. Here's over 1 million people trying to live in a place where there's hardly enough even to support the bare wildlife that lives. And so God provided food for them every day. And it says that he did that so they would learn that we don't live by bread alone, but by the words that come from God. But it also tells us that he wanted them to realize that every day they depended on him for their existence, not just when they were in the wilderness and needed the manna. All of us depend every day on him. Jesus reminded his disciples, and therefore us, in his Sermon on the Mount, that this is the case. When his disciples wanted to learn how to pray, he says, "This is how you should pray." Matthew chapter 6 and verse 9. "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from..." Jesus taught his disciples, he taught us to pray, "Father, give us our bread, and forgive us of our shortcomings, and lead us not today, but deliver us from the evil one." The whole emphasis is upon what God does for us today. We need to live daily above the worry and pursuits of this life, even though we have to pursue those. He said a little further down in that same Sermon on the Mount, as we call it, in Matthew 6:25, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you by worrying can even add a single hour to his life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow? They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. Yet that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire. Will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith?" Jesus is saying, our attitudes towards things and our pursuit of things are a reflection of our faith or lack of it. Yes, we have jobs, we have responsibilities we're taking care of, but do they consume us? Is it what we worry about? Is that what we lay awake at night concerned about? Instead, we should, as those who believe in God, put our trust in him. Do what we can with this life, but trust him ultimately, not our bank account, not our job, not those others around us that we depend upon sometimes as a part of our jobs. And he concludes this all by saying, verse 33 and 34, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." So we just need to be concerned that God really reigns in our life, and that we've done something today to try to extend the reign of God out beyond just ourselves into the... That's the most important thing. And so number three, not only do we have this brevity of life we only have today, but we have the provision of God who takes care of us today. But we need to make the most important choices each today we have. Back in that same story, when God brought the Israelites out of Egypt and he gave them their daily provisions for almost 40 years until they finally reached that land that he had promised to take them to. And then they had to fight to take it under their great leader Joshua once Moses had died. And after they had conquered the land and they were about to settle down to live in it, it would be very easy, no doubt, for them to think, "Look what we have done. We have conquered our enemies. We have taken this land. We are dividing it up, and each one of us has a portion of the land that's our own now." And yet Joshua warned them against that very thing, even though they now had it and God had given it to them. And so it says in Joshua chapter 24, he says, "You are not able to serve the Lord. He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive you if you rebel. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, He will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you after He has been good to you. But they say, no, we will serve the Lord. And Joshua then says to them that they need to decide today, that today, what they're going to do. He says, verse 15, but if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your forefathers, which they served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you're now living. But as for me and my household, we will serve. We have to make the decision who and what we're going to serve. We make that decision every day. Nothing else is more important than that. I'm recalling how the Apostle Paul, way back before he could be called Paul or even before he could be called Apostle, had been so devoted to his religion as a Jew and had even persecuted Christians and tried to stamp out the faith that came from belief in Jesus Christ until that day. He meets Jesus on the road to Damascus and he sees him in all of his glory, or at least all of the glory he could stand to see. And he became aware of the fact that he was fighting against the very thing that God was trying to do, not only in his life, but in all of ours. And he changed that day. But it was 3 days later before a man of God by the name of Ananias comes to him and says, now what are you waiting for? Arise, and in his case, be baptized and wash away your sin, calling on the name of the Lord. Saul was now ready to do something, but it took Ananias telling him, don't wait any longer. Make your decision now and do it. And he lived out the rest of his life based on that decision. Because every day he made it all over again to serve God that day, just like he had the day before and the day before that. We need to do the same thing. In the book of Hebrews in chapter 4, the Hebrew writer there talking to Christians borrows something from the Old Testament when God was speaking to the Jewish people back there and says, today, if you will hear His voice, harden not your heart. Sometimes when we hear what God is calling us to do, we in effect harden our heart. We think we've got tomorrow to do that. I've got other important things I've got to do today. Tomorrow or the day after that or sometime in the future, I will do what God calls me to do. We have no promise, only today. We have an invitation song that gives us a time to reflect on these things. If we can help anyone here with their decision about following God and serving Him, we certainly would like to help you. If you would come and let us know now while we stand up and sing. Tenderly calling, Tiet Home, calling today, calling today.